Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to LaGuardia Community College, and welcome to the Queens Broadband Advisory Committee hearing. My name is David Birdsell. I'm the Dean of the School of Public Affairs at Baruch College, and I'll be chairing today's meeting. What I'd like to do is first ask the members of the committee to introduce themselves, and then I would like to ask to the microphone Cindy Friedmutter, who will be welcoming us here to LaGuardia. So if I may first ask my colleagues to introduce themselves.
Good afternoon. My name is Neil Pariser. I'm Senior Vice President of SOBRO, the South Bronx Economic Development Corporation. We have an initiative going in the South Bronx to provide broadband throughout the entire area, and so it is a mandate that we find very close to our hearts, and that's one of the reasons why Gail had asked us to serve on this panel. We're glad to be here.
Tom Dunn, I represent Verizon.
Anthony Townsend, I'm with a nonprofit research group called the Institute for the Future that does technology forecasting.
I'm David Wicks. I'm David Wicks, an adjunct professor at Columbia and a consultant in the internet space.
Good afternoon. I'm Wendy Later with the New York City Economic Development Corporation.
And I'm Mitchell Albaum, New York City Department of Information Technology and Telecommunications.
I'd now like to ask Cindy Friedmutter to the microphone to welcome us here to LaGuardia Community College. She is Vice President for External and Community Affairs.
I want to welcome, on behalf of President Gail Mello, Council Members Brewer and Council Member Saunders, the whole committee. We are a college, just to let you know, a college that serves 50,000 residents of Western Queens, educating them for associate's degrees, students who move on to four-year colleges. And we do a lot of adult education, workforce development, and business assistance throughout Queens. We welcome you here to the college. It's a very important subject. Education, learning, all now is happening so much more on the internet, and so we appreciate your attention to this issue. We hope you have a wonderful hearing today. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much, Vice President Friedmutter. I would like in just a moment to introduce our two distinguished council members, but first I would like to introduce a special guest. We are, of course, fundamentally concerned here with telecommunications law, and we have with us today the author of the 1996 Telecommunications Act, U.S. Senator Larry Pressler. Senator Pressler.
Thank you very much, David, and all of you. I want to congratulate you on holding this hearing because you can have great influence. I did work on the national legislation, but this is the first time I've come to see how it actually works out. And if it is found that in New York City, the spectrum and the broadband is not completely out there, that would be a tale that needs to be told. So I congratulate you. I now spend about a third of my time on pro bono type activities. I have the honor of teaching a class with David at Baruch, but I'm here to listen and to learn. Thank you for your public service.
Thank you, sir. Yes, certainly. Senator, I believe that the Council Member Brewer has a question for you.
Can you come back to the microphone, sir?
Raise your right arm.
Yes. No, we're just delighted to have you here, and this is such a rare opportunity. So I hope that others will have questions. My question is, when you envisioned the E-rate and for the schools and the libraries and so on, one of the issues we have now is that the E-rate only covers the school rooms, classrooms, and not the whole school. And obviously, when you walk around LaGuardia Community College, for instance, you see that in the hallways and in the cafeteria, there are terminals, and it's a much more connected environment. So this is I hope others will have lots of questions with this wonderful, unique opportunity to have you here. But do you think that in today's world the E-rate should be expanded, and is that possible? And with libraries and schools, are there other entities and institutions that you should think it should be covered? And what do you envision for the future in terms of reauthorization?
Well, you know, that's a question that we need to get into the presidential debate I've been advocating, and that's a good question, and thank you for raising that. You know, under the Snow-Rockefeller amendments, that is correct. It wasn't broad enough. And I'm just right now working on an article. I'm now out of Congress. I spent 22 years there, but I'm working on an article of the need to rewrite the 96 Act to bring it up to date, but especially the Snow-Rockefeller provisions. And I think it's very important that this committee let that be known to the to their federal representatives. Now, telecommunications is a funny business because the general public doesn't really understand what's going on, so it becomes an insider's game. It's a lobbyist game, and that's unfortunate. But I think we've made some progress with the Snow-Rockefeller amendments, but they're not nearly what they should be, and that would be one great improvement. I just heard another thing here today that some students can get something on Wi-Fi in the schoolyard but not in the schoolhouse, and there are all sorts of limitations. It's way out of date from 96 when it was passed, and I'll certainly carry that message back to anybody I see in Washington, and I thank you very much.
Are there other questions for Senator Pressler? Thank you, sir. I would now like to recognize our distinguished council representation, Committee on Technology and Government Chair Gail Brewer, and Queens Councilman and a member of that committee, James Sanders.
Thank you very much. I'm just here to also welcome folks to indicate that this is our fourth hearing. We've been in all four boroughs. We'll be in Staten Island next. And to say that we are combining this public effort with the work of Economic Development Corporation and the consultants hired by them to look at what broadband should look like in the city of New York. Needless to say, every time we meet, there's a new kind of technology or things are changing, so it's a evolving story. But I think we're ahead of the curve compared to what some of the other cities have had to experience. And public input is incredibly important. So I thank everyone who's here today, and we look forward to the testimony.
Thank you to the members of the committee, to Chair Brewer. It's a pleasure to be here or back here again. If New York City is to compete in this new world that we find ourselves in, every day you hear practically of a new country coming into existence. If we are to compete, we're going to have the most modern technology available. And that means committees like this are going to have to find ways of what are the best technologies that New York City will need. So I'm very glad to be here to hear all of these things going on to make sure that we're going to follow this in a good manner, and at the same time to make sure that we understand, of course, that we have one New York, and we have to bridge and make sure that all of the people of New York City participate. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. I would now like to begin the substance of this hearing. The purpose that we have here today is to hear from you, your experience with broadband, spots that you feel need to be addressed in either broadband policy or broadband provisioning, and to hear your experiences with about this important element of our panoply of communications, telecommunications options. What I'm going to do is read names off of these cards, and I do hope anybody who wishes to speak to us today, please fill out with a sergeant of arms one of these white cards, and he's standing there down at stage right, waving at you right now. So if you wish to speak to us, please fill out a card, and then you can be added to the witness list. Witnesses, I would ask two things. Number one, that you come to this microphone where Senator Pressler was standing just a moment ago, so that we can have you on the record and on tape. And number two, to limit your comments to 3 minutes. We have a number of people who wish to speak. After your prepared 3-minute comment, and I'm afraid I am going to have to be firm on time limits, there may be members of the committee or either of the council members who will have questions for you. So without further ado, I would like to call the first witness, Frank Pasquale.
Thanks very much to the members of the City Council and to the committee. It's a real honor to be here. Today I come to speak as an academic. I'm an associate professor at a law school, Seton Hall Law School, and associate director of our Institute for Law Science and Technology. And I'd like to hit three main points. The first being that we have to consider broadband infrastructure really as essential to our economy as railroads and highways and the mail system in times past, that this is an essential facility in order to improve our economy. And the second point that I want to hit is that I'm very worried about two different digital divides that we see in today's society. The first digital divide that I think is quite essential that we address, and that Councilman Sanders has brought up already, is the digital divide between, say, very well-connected portions of our country and less connected portions, both rural areas and within cities. And this is a grave concern. But a second digital divide is the divide that we see between the U.S. and the rest of the world that is opening up now. And I've put in my prepared statements that I can distribute to the committee if you'd like, newspaper articles which cover the astonishing gap that is growing between the United States and other developed countries. You can get 20 times faster access for the same price in Japan. You can do much better in South Korea. Europe and other countries are doing much better. And the question becomes, why are they? And I think that one of the parts of the statement that I've prepared for the committee today, the key lesson that I think we can draw from that, is that these nations have endorsed very vigorous and active co-investment and co-partnership between governmental authorities and the private sector. We have many people within the private sector in the United States that would like us to believe that a free market approach, that a purely private property approach, is the approach that would allow us to most quickly wire people and to make that investment. And I do agree that investments need to be made, that this stuff does not come out of free air, thin air, and that's the lesson that we learned from, say, the Philadelphia context and other areas where muni broadband failed. But I think that what we really do need to also think about in this context is how can we have co-investment by government partners that will allow us not only to have economic efficiency, but also to vindicate the types of political goals and community goals that are necessary in a vital broadband infrastructure. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pasquale. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Pasquale? Yes, if you could please leave copies of your statement with the Sergeant at Arms, that would be terrific, so we can get those. Question from Councilmember Brewer.
Thanks.
My question is, we are facing the situation where we read that Minneapolis may be the only city that is completely wiring or wirelessly providing access to all the residents. And in a political, you mentioned that word, in a political and partnership way, how do you suggest a city like New York approach making sure that there's no digital divide here, and that I think in other cities or other countries there's a lot of federal input, which is what we also need here. But do you have any suggestions as to how we could, in fact, achieve what our goal is in the current scenario of perhaps no federal support?
Yes, and I do think that that is a worrisome trend that we're seeing, sort of a federal government that, you know, I mean, is quite willing to support, say, highways, but, you know, what about public transit, and also what about this type of infrastructure? And I think we have to have a number of creative ideas here. I mean, I think that one of the things we can sort of look at or begin to look at is, I think when we look at the carriers themselves, one of the things that they have asked Congress for is the right to charge differentially, say, different applications providers. Say, you know, Google's making a ton of money, Facebook is making a ton of money. Give us the right to charge them more, and then we could use that funds to build up our own infrastructure. Now, I have written against that approach, and I think that that particular approach would be dangerous to a climate of innovation that has sort of flourished on the Internet. However, I think that if we thought about that type of taxation of, say, application or content providers, not necessarily allowing the private companies themselves to use that to cross-subsidize, but having, say, municipal authorities somehow finding a way to tap into those funds, provide essential infrastructure, I think that could be an interesting approach to this type of problem. So I do think that, you know, there are entities out there that could possibly be the source and ultimately would be helped by a wider broadband infrastructure.
Other questions for Mr. Pasquale? Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you.
And I would just ask anybody who does have prepared testimony, please deposit copies of that testimony with the Sergeant-at-Arms, and we will then get copies of those up at the table as well. I'd now like to call Joshua Breitbart of the People's Production House. And while Mr. Breitbart is setting up, I'd like to acknowledge that we have been joined by the actual chair of this committee, Sean Bell.
A little shorter than Mr. Pasquale. So thank you very much, members of the committee, honorable council members, and also to the Sergeant-at-Arms and everybody who is documenting this hearing. I'm the policy director of People's Production House, a nonprofit organization that teaches radio production and media literacy in middle and high schools in New York City. And we also have courses for community organizations in radio production and technological literacy. In addition, we have a new program, the Digital Expansion Initiative, educating the public on issues relating to broadband access. The materials that the Sergeant-at-Arms are distributing, I'll refer to. They're not the testimony I'm reading from right now. I'll refer to them and explain them as I go along. I actually delivered testimony at the first public hearing in the Bronx, in which I said that People's Production House has a core of eager reporters ready to work with you to engage people with no or very limited access to the Internet. Since they are the people any new initiative from this committee will be intended to serve, they need to be a part of the process from the very beginning to ensure that it will properly meet their needs. I want to share with you a couple of brief clips our reporters have gathered through interviews with their neighbors, their classmates, or other members of their community organizations. And the clips are very brief, but I hope you might indulge me in going a little bit over time since these are voices of people who aren't here today.
So indulged.
I also don't know if we'll be able to get this to work exactly, but let's see. It's very ad hoc field technology. This is Felix Ortiz. He's a construction worker who lives in Queens. He's a member of New Immigrant Community Empowerment, located in Jackson Heights, which does what its name says, Immigrant Empowerment. And here he is interviewing Arturo Mendoza, who's a fellow construction worker who also lives and works in Queens.
Mr. Breitbart, I wonder if it would be possible for you to summarize that interview and perhaps provide subsequently copies of the interview to the committee.
Yeah, I can do that. And I can submit a CD with various interview clips. The point is actually the stuff that he and the other interviewer I was going to play a clip from, Vivian Omobogi from Nawion, which works with immigrants from West Africa, is less the content of what they're saying. And since it's actually a lot of information you've heard, but it's more to make the point that that there are many people out there who are engaged in this issue and want to participate directly in this process but cannot for various reasons, and that People's Production House is doing our best to connect them with this process. And all of the people we interact with are hearing about this committee and this work for the first time through us. None of them are aware of what you're doing, even though they care very much about this issue and want to participate. In my earlier testimony, I submitted a number of recommendations based on my research into broadband task forces in other cities, and the report that was distributed to you is a report I did for New America Foundation on Philadelphia. And the And then I've also written a letter since then with some recommendations for other steps I think you can take to enhance public engagement. And I recognize that this committee has no staff beyond your volunteer participation, no budget, and we are trying to help in that process of connecting the community to this process. And these recommendations are some things that would, even though there's just one more public hearing left, that would help us in that process. So thank you for considering the recommendations and that testimony and the letter. And if I can help either with questions now or at a later date, I'd be very happy to.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Breitbart?
Tom? Do you work with the community access organizations? Do you work with the community access organizations?
Do you mean public access, like Manhattan Neighborhood Network? We're collaborating on a video project, which I believe you may have been contacted about to participate, working through a community grant collaboration with Manhattan Neighborhood Network to work with high school students to investigate the technologies and the infrastructure that go into making the internet. As the senator said, it often is an inside game, the discussion, because the topic and the technology can be somewhat opaque. And so we're taking two steps. Not only are we trying to publicize that this discussion, this process is going on, we're also trying to develop educational materials that explains the somewhat complicated or obtuse issues in a way that's very accessible. So high school students doing a video project in collaboration with the public access channels is one way we're doing that.
Joshua, I certainly would be glad. I know that just last week I met with some of the folks from Make the Road NYC, and we'd be glad if there was a group of people in any borough, particularly immigrants, we could do some simultaneous translation, et cetera, to talk about this issue. We would be glad to do that.
Okay, yeah, I think that may be a good thing to have a specific meeting where we do translation, but it doesn't have to be for, in the whole auditorium. Thank you.
Mr. Breitbart, we don't have your letter in front of us today. Could you just offer the top two suggestions you have for increasing attention and public engagement on this particular issue?
I thought maybe copies had been distributed.
I'm sorry. I'm the only one who doesn't have it.
Okay. So, yeah, I don't know. Do you want me to?
Yes, top two, please.
Okay. Well, something that Antoine Wallace, who testified at the Brooklyn hearing, suggested in terms of having hearings in the evening. As the council member suggests, maybe a supplemental event in the evening may suffice to that end. At the beginning, there was a lot of excellent work done to keep the website up to date, which obviously doesn't reach people offline, but it does allow us to have that material that we can then translate and pass on to other people. And the notice for this hearing was not on the website as late as this morning when I checked. And there may be, again, that's why I thank the documentation. So if the website could be kept very much up to date, that would be also extremely helpful.
That's our fault.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. Other questions for Mr. Breitbart? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I would next like to call Dr. Takeshi Utsumi, who is with the Global University System.
My name is Takeshi Utsumi, but just call me a Tak. It's much easier. And I have a nonprofit organization, a Global Systems Analysis and Simulation in Flushing, and we are creating Global University System, which is the headquarters at the University of Tampere, Finland. And I have been working on the closing digital divide for over 35 years. Since the first demonstration of the ARPANET in October of 1972. And I have worked on the extension of the Telnet, which is the predecessor of the internet, to many Asian countries and to Japan and so on, and worked on the deregulation of the Japanese telecom policies. Now, as he mentioned, Japan and Korea is a way ahead of the United States. they are paying only $50 per month for 100 meg to 160 meg. And here in New York, my school, Brooklyn Poly, has only 100 meg. Columbia University, only the 100 meg. And most of the major universities in Japan are connected with the 100 giga lines. And even local university had 1 giga internet. And there is a connection between Japan and Siberia, 1.3 tera BPS. And we are start advocating 2 tera internet across African countries because Japanese government is going to provide almost $10-20 billion. And also, Asian Development Bank is going to have super highway along the old Silk Road. We are providing and advocating similar tera BPS internet. So I think New York ought to be a center, very dynamic information center of the world. And yet, I have only 10 meg through Time and Warner, which goes down to almost 5 meg. And it's a real shame here. And that, as one of the brochure said, U.S. is now on the 15th great ranking compared with those other countries. So I am hoping your New York ought to revive the new broadband internet, at least having a tera BPS for trunk line around the 5 boroughs. Then so-called broadband wireless approach through a park behind the New York City Library, we can access laptop free of charge. So same way to have around New York, and that all those education software is becoming open and free of charge. So why not to have such a broadband free of charge, so that all those people can access. And more importantly, the future of the internet is more broadband, now only accessing multimedia web teaching. That's not enough. The future is to have much broader with the video conferencing and also with the grid technology, which I initiated almost 20, 30 years ago, which combined different simulation models together through internet so that the children start working together on the computers. Like NASA proposed, the children assign one high school, say Seattle or at Boston, to design part of the mock-up shuttle engine or tail and fuselage, main wing, and so on, and combine together. So same way, you can let those youngsters working together through broadband on the computers. So I hope New York will become much, much vigorous to have a broadband. I really shame to live here with this slow speed internet nowadays compared with Japan or Korea.
Thank you, Dr. Utsumi. Mm-hmm. Are there questions for Dr. Utsumi? Please stay at the microphone, sir. Councilmember Brewer. Oops, no, I'm sorry. Mr. Townsend.
So I think this is an interesting perspective that we haven't heard about in earlier hearings. Yes. Would you say that the state of broadband in New York puts the city at a disadvantage in attracting the global kinds of scientific research enterprises that you're talking about?
Yes, as far as when I started my computer work at the Brooklyn Poly, there was only one analog computer, which was mounted on the battleship Missouri. And afterward, all the computer is advanced, and that Brooklyn body would stay behind. So same token, I left other places. So same token, New York is getting so behind. So you have to work out a lot.
Other questions?
Professor, what do you think in other countries it's so advanced because the national government, as you said, puts in billions of dollars, and do you think that's what should happen in this country also?
Well, I have been working with the Finland people. Finnish is ranking world number one in the education and vocational training. That I have been helping my friend for 10 years, you see. And they said they put a lot of effort to have a best people to teach in the K-12. That's the first thing you have to do. So you have to put a lot of money on that and good graduate from the college to put there. That's the first thing. So they have a good multimedia lab. We are working together.
Neil.
Doctor, yes. We heard the numbers are startling. We actually have heard something previously about, I think it was Holland, who actually outstripped the United States at this point. And listening to you about Brooklyn Poly, you're going down to 5 meg, you had said, in terms of your broadband access. Is there anything in particular that the lack of broadband has impacted on Brooklyn Polytechnic? Because it doesn't have 100 gig, but it has 5 meg.
Well, if you have such a broadband, say, in a giga level, then those youngsters start working on the virtual reality. And the virtual reality not only put the three-dimensional simulation models in your own PC, but next stage is to put that part of the virtual reality combined together with the another friend who may be living in Singapore or Hong Kong. That kind of the connection through broadband in a global scale, either one to put the youngsters working together to start promoting mutual understanding each other. That is the way to have a global understanding and global peace.
I guess I'm trying to understand. So you're saying that you're prevented from doing that, having a global correspondence?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Those, if I could have the broadband, even though that streamlined video, which I download, is a very foggy. Mm.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Okay. I would next like to call to the microphone 3 people all at once. They are all from IS 204 in this borough. And so I would like to ask Nadia Betancourt, Samuel Falk, and Daisy Garcia to come to the microphone. And the Sergeant at Arms will help you with the level of that microphone.
Can you hear me all right? My name is Bill Rappel. I'm with Computers for Youth, which is an organization I think many of you are familiar with. We work here in the city. The 3 students that are going to be presenting are all students who participated in our program partnering with IS 204. So I just wanted to give you a brief introduction. As many of you know, Computers for Youth is invested in making sure that the home learning environment is a richer environment and also that parent involvement is made easier. We do this by selecting a middle school in a low-income neighborhood and providing every sixth grader in that school a home computer loaded with educational software which does not require internet access. However, going forward, more of that software is going to be available exclusively on the internet, and the broadband connection will be especially important to our families. It's already very important. It's going to grow so increasingly. So I want to introduce the person from our program who can tell you just a little bit about these students before they speak.
Good afternoon, members of the committee and the City Council. My name is Rima McCoy, and I'm actually, my purpose right now is just to introduce and provide a little context for the students who are waiting to speak. I manage Computers for Youth's student software team. And what happens is after computers are distributed at a middle school, students are asked if they want to become more involved. And students who indicate on a survey that they want to become more involved have the opportunity to participate in a Saturday program that I help run, where the students come to our office in Manhattan from all over the city, and they test educational software. So they're evaluating educational software, they're developing presentations. Last week, they gave presentations on 13 different types of educational software to educators that flew in from all over the country to hear from them. The three students who are about to speak were part of that program. We're in our third year of doing this, and what we found is every year more and more of the educational software that's being nominated to be evaluated by the students are online. And because of that, Computers for Youth has made a commitment this year to pay for students to have internet so that they can participate in our program. Because it would be really sad if a student wanted to participate and couldn't because at home they didn't have online access. So we've actually worked with the cable companies to pay for their access at home. So the three students you're going to hear from have received internet because they're participating in our program. And they've been in our program for about 3 months. So Samuel's going to talk first, then Nadia, then Daisy.
Ladies and gentlemen, of the Broadband Advisory Committee and member and staff of the New York City Council. My name is Samuel. Everyone should have fast and inexpensive internet service at home because like they're a good way for you to research for a project. And it's a way for you to do your homework faster. Last time when I was doing a project in the library, I was like, waiting online, the list was very long, and then when I got there, my work was about to be done, but then unfortunately, the deadline minute was up, so all my work was gone. So then I told myself, I think I should try to get internet service in my house so I could finish my work faster and so I could hand in my work to a teacher on time. Well, for the broadband internet, it makes your life easier. If you're trying to download software to help you with schoolwork or anything that has to do with educational, you could download it. It'll be much faster, and you could use it and then help you with anything that you need. For example, last time, I was trying to download a video about social study, and then it got really slow when I was downloading. But then once I received broadband, it only downloaded for like 1 minute or two. So I get to watch the video faster, and when I dialed up, it took me a while. It took like 10 minutes. So I think that we should have broadband, and it shouldn't be too expensive. Thank you.
Thanks, Sam. Sam, could you please stay right? Sam, don't go anywhere. Could you just stay right there? And then what I'd like to do is hear from Nadia and Daisy, and then we'll have questions perhaps for all of you at once. So, Nadia.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the Broadband Advisory Committee and members and staff of the New York City Council. My name is Nadia Betancourt, and I'm representing IS204 and Computers for Youth. Well, I think that everyone should be able to have fast and inexpensive internet service at home because it's a very useful and fast resource, and it's like information right on your fingertips. because it's very easy to access. And also, the reason why people should have inexpensive internet service is because they will be able to afford it and everyone can know what is going on around the world. It will also make their lives a lot easier. The reason why fast-speed internet is a very useful and important resource is because you can use it for any kinds of research, for any kinds of projects like research and all those different projects you have at school. Having high-speed internet at home will be good because it could save time instead of going to the library. It's more enjoyable, relaxing, and comfortable, and it's also more private and quiet. I've only had broadband for only 2 months, and it's made a big difference. In this short time, it made a big difference because it helped me a lot more in school for projects and research. One example of research will be like looking out for jobs or anything, helping my brother and sister in their homework. It also made another big difference because I don't have to walk to the library and wait a long time. So having broadband at home saves a lot of time, even though walking is a good exercise for everybody. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Nadia. Daisy?
Ladies and gentlemen of the Broadband Advisory Committee and members and staff of the New York City Council. My name is Daisy Garcia, and I am representing IS204N Computers for You. I think everyone should be able to have fast and inexpensive internet service at home because lots of people need it, especially kids need computers and broadband because they do many research for their homework. And if you have a computer on broadband, it will be easier because you could go anywhere in the internet without people watching you. For example, I once had a project for Black History Month, and I had broadband so I could stay in my house to do what I want in the internet. But if I had to go to the library, I would be rushing because you only have 30 minutes for everything. And then, as Sam said, everything would get deleted, so it's really not a good idea. But broadband, you have all the time you need in your house. So that's why I think everybody should have broadband in the house.
Thank you, Daisy. Are there any questions for Sam, Daisy, or Nadia?
Where do you learn how to use the internet? Do you learn at school, or do you teach each other, or do you learn from your parents or relatives?
Well, for me, I learn in school because they teach me a lot, because before I didn't have internet. So I think I learned from school.
My parents, he taught me how to use the internet. He taught me how to use the internet and what website and what search engine to go to search for a project.
Well, I also learned from school because I didn't have internet before.
Gail.
At other hearings, people have testified that they had the internet, these are kids like you, and then it had to get cut off because it's expensive. So my question to you is, do you think other kids in your class have it at home, and how many, in the class? And then I think you have been testifying that when you have internet at home, you can actually turn in your papers more on time and you can do a better job. So I'm just wondering then how many other kids have it, and just to reiterate, if it's true, how much better you can do in school if you have it at home.
Well, before I was talking to my friends, what kind of internet service do you have? Some of them say they have dial-up, but not many of them have cable internet. Only one out of 27 kids in my classroom. very few of them have DSL. So at school, like when teachers told when can you hand in the project on time or when, many people say we have to take a lot of time. And then some teachers say, oh, why? Because like we have to research a lot of work. And sometimes on the internet web page, they have you need high quality. Sometimes on the web page, it holds lots of memory. So if you have dial up, picture will be showing very slowly, and information will be showing slowly. So if you have broadband, it will be so fast. So if the internet site holds like lots of memory, with that broadband, you could show all the information and pictures, so you could get your work done. Well, me, I spent like a lot of time just to finish a project. So when I got broadband, and then I just did one project, it just took me like one day. But before, when I had dial up, it took me like 1 week. So it made a difference for me. Thank you.
Mr. Harrison.
Well, in my class, I don't really think everybody has the high-speed internet because some people have to stay after school in one of the classrooms to do their research or go to the library in the school so they could look for the information they need. So I think it will be helpful for them to have the broadband at home.
Well, as Daddy was saying, only I think a really few people have that kind of cable internet we have, and it really does make a difference because before, as I was saying, I had a project. Many years before that, I had projects too, but I had to go to the library, and it would really take time, and I would have to be hurrying. But now that I have broadband, I could do it real fast, and it won't take that much time as it would in the library.
Getting very worried about the libraries, listening to you. Could you be a little bit more specific? You all said your last project. What was your last project that you had to go on the internet as opposed to going to a library?
My last project would be like around 2 weeks ago.
Okay. And what was it?
It was Black History Month.
And what did you have to do?
I had to research this man named Thurgood Marshall. And
we've heard of him.
And the teacher that assigned it to me was Mr. Katz. He's over there. He's a social studies
professor.
Okay. Well, my last project was, like Daisy said, 2 weeks ago. It was the same project. And we had to do research on the person we got. And it wasn't, like, easy because sometimes in the library, they might not have the book. They might not have any books on the person they gave you that you were assigned to find research for. So it will be easier on the computer, so you just type in the name and a lot of information could come up.
Well, my last project was still, I'm still working on it. It's that's for the science fair project. Well, I was being assigned for a while, and then because of my diet up, for science fair project, I was like looking out for websites, and then to help like give me information on the nervous system of a human body. Well, for the website I was on, it was giving, it was taking up a lot of space. So, image and videos were very slow. So, right now with this broadband internet, right now I'm almost done with my project.
Have you given up going to the library because you have internet?
Right now, like, I don't really, like, right now, like, give up going to the library, but
that was the right answer. That was a good answer.
Well, the library from my house to the library is kind of far from here. I have to walk, like, 30 minutes to, like, 35 minutes. So with that 35 minutes, it's a waste of my time. But that 35 minutes, I could have done like 35 minutes of my project. So that's like wasting a little of my time. So in my house, I could like research instead.
I can't even respond to that.
Well, I might have been giving up going to the library, but I don't think the reason I might go to the library is for the books. Like, I could get books to read, but maybe not to use the internet that much since I have internet at home.
Well, I haven't given up on going to the library either. One, because I like reading, and two, because I have to take my brother and sister to get books so they can improve their reading skills.
Thank you.
Questions from David Wicks.
With the computer in your home, do you find that you can have some fun with your parents as you're studying these projects? Do they get involved?
I think yes, because they learn from, because they could see what I'm doing, and then they know, then they might like be like, who is this, what does he do, and then that's when we start getting into this conversation.
I agree with Daisy. Our parents could get involved too, because they could help us. They might be able to help us do more research and find a lot more information.
Yes, because like, for this year, I was going out on the internet, and then suddenly sometimes my dad just come over to me and say, what is this? Is this someone I know, or are you doing this for his project? He might like always ask me questions, like wondering why I'm on this website. So he's like asking me to see if I'm paying attention on this website, see if I'm not doing something else.
Wendy, later.
Do your parents already know how to use a computer? Do they go online on their own, or are you teaching them how to do that?
My parents already know how to go online, and sometimes he needs help on the internet, but he always asks me to help him how to copy this page, how to print this page, how to go back, and how to get the graphic better, and how to play this video, and how to download this so that I could like see at home.
Well, I'm teaching my parents, but my dad is getting the hang of it, so I can say yeah, he's learning.
Well, I also have to help my mom do some like research and help her know like how to manage a computer on her own.
I also wanted to ask Bill a question about computers for you. Whether you've done any studies on what the percentage of broadband usership is among the students that you serve.
I don't have those statistics in front of me. I think, can I get that information to you?
If you have it,
yes,
right.
I don't have it here, but I will talk to the member of the committee who's helping.
And also, you said that you're now paying for or providing broadband service for some students. Is it just students at IS 204? Are there other schools? And what are the plans going forward for that?
There are two programs. One is a program for the students that are participating in our student software specialist team, which these guys represent those students. And then we had a pilot program with Cablevision at one of our schools in the Bronx. Which we provided software, we provided internet access, broadband internet access to them. We provide all our families 8 hours of free dial-up access, which we know is like having a minute of internet access. But the idea is that they can get on and then select which service they want. They can also, with this service, after those 8 hours, pay $9 a month for unlimited access. It is slow dial-up access. But they can also pay with a personal check or a money order, which is not available normally to this company's clients, but is available to our families. So
the broadband right now has just been the one pilot in the Bronx?
Yes, it's the one pilot school that we did this fall. Yep. Uh-huh.
And was it successful? Would you say that it's going to expand?
It's too early to tell. There was a core group of families. As some of you may have heard, that Triple Play is enormously successful. At this particular school, there were a number of families that already had broadband access, and then there were a group of families that did not have that access and were really reluctant to sign up for the project, like we reached out to them. So there may be some other reason besides just cost why some families are not signing up. But whether it's whether we're going to scale it for next year, we just don't know yet.
David Wicks.
I didn't hear on your introduction, but do you have a web address for information on your program?
Yes, we do. It's www, and then the first initials of the three words of our organization. So it's cfy.org, computersforyouth.org. And if you go to the news section, there's a a brief video. It's 3 minutes, called Today. I think it was done by NBC this morning in New York or something. But it's a very efficient way to find out about our program is just look at that link.
Thank you.
Two very quick questions. Nadia, you talked about helping to tutor your brothers and sisters with their homework. Can you talk about a little bit about how that's changed since you got broadband access, if it has?
Well, it changed because I had, like, sometimes I had to help them find books in the library, and they had to read them. So now, when they have, like, projects, my sister and my brother, since they're, like, in third grade, they have to do projects for science and social studies. So instead of going to the library and looking for books and information, I could just type in the topic of their project, and it'll give me a lot of information.
Okay, thank you. All three of you said that most of your friends did not have broadband access. Do you find that they all come over to your place to get broadband access?
Excuse me, can you, like, say it again?
Now that you have broadband access, and you said that a lot of your friends don't, do they wind up coming over to use your computer?
Not really, because like most times they try to get the work done by themselves. So, like, you know, they don't want to struggle. That's why.
Very considerate. Either of the other two of you?
Well, as I was saying, no, they don't come to my house.
Okay.
Well, I have a friend that she doesn't have internet at home, so she comes over to my house and she just does her projects or her research in my computer.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Well, I would like to thank all three of you. And you've just been terrific. And thanks, too, to Ms. McCoy and Mr. Rappel for all this wonderful work. Thanks. Thanks for joining us here today. I had the pleasure of speaking to Nadia and to Daisy and to Sam up in the audience earlier, and they assured me that they were broadband experts, and we found that out today. It is indeed so. I'd now like to ask the microphone Scott Walpow.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Scott Walpow. I'm an IT professional. I've been involved in the internet since 95, the real early days. And just a first remark, it's kind of ironic, you're a broadband committee, yet you're not streaming this hearing live, which means a lot of people who don't have the time to invest, like an audience did today, take it down here. And if you streamed, you can meet more constituents and possibly even have feedback from more people to ask questions. But I'm more concerned that once we get broadband access to the general public, what about net neutrality? What about the fact that the providers are throttling bandwidth, they're blocking ports, and they're not disclosing the real speeds? And the problem with that is that if you throttle bandwidth, you run the danger of infringing on people's right to access free speech and what they want to access, and you're getting the ISPs designed to be the gatekeepers of what people see and what they don't see. And I'm not saying they don't have a valid argument. I understand from a technology standpoint why they do what they do, but most concerned, they don't disclose it. When they block ports, they limit the ability for parents to install internet cameras to monitor their children, to communicate better. They limit the ability to the new appliances like telephones and smart refrigerators and smart appliances so they can communicate, they can monitor their houses, they can understand what's going on. And without understanding what your real speed is, how do you know how much bandwidth you're using? And are you truly getting what you bargained for? And I don't know if there have been enough cases in the state of New York. I do know in other parts of the country they've actually thrown users off by violating some unspecified amount of bandwidth without ever telling people what that bandwidth is. It seems like a mystery number. So how are we going to address this? How are we going to address this problem once we get bandwidth to everybody else? Suddenly they have the bandwidth, but they can only go to what the ISP says they can go to.
Thank you, sir. Questions for Mr. Walpo?
Question. Is this working? So would you say these kind of behaviors by network operators are inhibiting New Yorkers' ability to innovate new products and services?
100% yes. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
I would now like to call Daniel Dragon from Queens Community Board 8.
My name is Daniel Dragon. I am a broadband customer in Queens, and in my shopping for a broadband internet connection in Queens, I realized there's very little, if any, competition. Most people are only able to access either cable or DSL, and other than that, there are no other choices. Often, any new choices that come along are provided by existing utility companies, such as Verizon or possibly Con Edison one day may decide to do something. The market, for a new company to try and enter the market is extremely difficult or impossible. Look at RCN. A couple years ago, they decided to come into Queens. They only built out a quarter, and by now they've gone three times bankrupt. So it's extremely difficult for any new players to come in and actually build out their own infrastructure. It's been mentioned in this conference that libraries are an important part of providing broadband access to the community. I highly agree with this. Libraries allow people to access the internet who don't want to maintain a computer at home, don't want to pay for an internet connection, don't want to deal with spyware or having to upgrade their computer or pay hundreds of dollars if their computer breaks. Some people don't actually need the access of 24/7, so for 30 minutes once a week, that's all they need, and for them that's free, and that's a massive savings. Another thing I've noticed, even if libraries do disappear one day or their funding gets cut and they stop offering internet access to the public, some neighborhoods in Queens, but I say some, offer internet cafes, which are very similar to libraries, but they charge money. I found the rates are extremely reasonable at $1 an hour, and you can stay there however long you want. Some even offer privacy booths, which for certain people, that may be a plus. Another thing I've noticed is oftentimes, if a consumer wants to pay extra for an even faster connection, there aren't any opportunities other than to go to a business-grade connection, which usually becomes hundreds of dollars a month. There's no provider offers internet access at, let's say, 100 or 200 a month for somebody who really, really wants a fast connection. The only choice is to go to business-grade connections, which are absolutely unaffordable for even for any user who actually would want to buy it. Another thing I see is that municipal broadband, I don't think, works often because the governments and the providers that implement municipal broadband often overestimate how many customers they can actually get. Most municipal broadband does not actually try to compete on a performance basis with incumbents, such as cable or DSL providers, and usually most people stick with cable or DSL and don't go to municipal broadband. Another thing I would like to talk about is the Universal Service Fund. I think it should fund broadband access, but right now it funds only voice technology, plain voice, and that seems to be a dead technology nowadays. I wish the Universal Service Fund could fund other things such as broadband access. Also, internet speeds don't seem to increase over the years. I mean, sure, we have small increases here and there by providers, but I'm waiting for the day where I can choose from 10 different internet cable companies, each of which are competing over each other because I have a really fast connection and I can serve all the TVs in my house simultaneously with streaming internet. And one day I wish for a world where any computer in the world is just as fast as any computer sitting in my own house next to me. So the entire world is one big local access network. Another thing I've noticed is oftentimes DSL internet access isn't available in a lot of New York City. Some years ago I went with a reseller and it turns out that they were unable to prove to the telephone company that there was a problem with my line, even though my reseller definitely saw that on their own equipment. There was just no way they could get through the red tape to prove to the telephone company that there was something wrong with my line. I see that oftentimes if people try to go with resellers of existing broadband technology, they get into a lot of red tape, high prices, and usually give up the service and go to an incumbent provider. Another thing that I would suggest is oftentimes for small businesses, getting a internet connection, since it's so much so expensive, they can be thrown at thousands of dollars of installation fees for someone to come and dig up their street just to give them an internet access line. Oftentimes, also, I've noticed that in industrial parks in New York City have almost no internet access. Cable companies don't provide access, and usually they have to resort to extremely expensive T1 lines. Oftentimes,
If you could wrap up your comments in about 30 seconds, please.
Okay, that would be all that I have to say.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Dragon?
Can I ask you, you said you'd noticed that some industrial parks don't have internet access. Which ones in particular?
I've read a study on the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and there's no DSL service or cable service there. If anyone wants internet access, they have to resort to a pricey T1 line there.
I think that's been remedied. Is that a study that came out about 4 years ago?
Jonathan, I don't know the age of it.
Okay. Thanks.
Other questions? Thank you, Mr. Dragon. I would now like to ask to the microphone Bruce Lincoln of Urban Cyberspace.
Good afternoon, and allow me to thank you, Madam Chair, and the Broadband Advisory Committee for this opportunity to present testimony on this critical issue. My name is Bruce Lincoln, and I am the founder and chief design scientist of the urban cyberspace company, Community Technology Center Laboratory. Currently, I am an affiliated scholar at the Columbia Institute for Teleinformation, where I am organizing a conference on ultra broadband and the second digital economy. I'm also the resident community technologist at the School of Engineering and Applied Science, where I teach a course on science, technology, and community, which is focused on the development of a pilot community technology and entrepreneurship center in Harlem's Grant Houses, which is designed as a model to be replicated in NYCHA properties throughout the five boroughs. In the information age, every citizen, regardless of socioeconomic status and geographical location, must have robust and useful access, both fixed and wireless, to the broadband internet, and the requisite on-demand training and services necessary to make use of these resources for personal, family, and community betterment. I recently attended the State of the Internet Conference, as well as the Future of Broadband in Washington on January 29th and 30th. I was surprised that at the Future of Broadband pre-conference, the fastest speeds that were mentioned in the big broadband report commissioned by EDUCARS were in the 10 megabit per second to the 100 megabit per second range. In light of the comparative speeds of the residential internet in other countries such as Korea, Japan, and Sweden, 10 to 100 megabits per second is slow and woefully inadequate if the goal is to deploy life-critical applications such as immersive distance learning and telemedicine applications. If we are talking about the deployment of the next generation of the internet in Queens and throughout New York City, at the very least, given the lifespan of the infrastructure relative to cost, we have to be talking about symmetric bandwidth upstream and downstream in the gigabit per second range. Not big broadband, but true broadband, the technology of metro-scale regional cyberspace initiatives. Technologically underserved markets in both urban and rural communities, when taken in the aggregate, can be considered as representing an untapped multi-billion dollar marketplace. However, when viewed individually, these communities do not fit into the cost-benefit model of the incumbents and new entrants. The return on investment requirement of the incumbents forces them to cherry-pick, that is, choose only those large-scale markets that have the optimum combination of potential business and residential customers with income levels that will allow them to recoup a multiple return on their initial capital investment. This model then excludes low-income urban communities as well as rural communities with low population densities spread over large geographic distance, such as what we find in the South. Whether deliberate or inadvertent, this results in electronic or information redlining. This makes large-scale investment sense when a company such as an incumbent telco or cable co has to optimize shareholder value. Incumbents look at standard technology rather than a diversity of technologies that are best suited to local needs. When the goal is equitable access regardless of income or location to universal affordable broadband, then this cost-benefit model has to be inverted and another model has to be developed for widespread use and application that takes into account indirect benefits. In this case, that model is that of metro-scale regional cyberspace initiatives, or MRCI. Metroscale Regional Cyberspace Initiatives, or MRCI, is based on a different physics, engineering, and economic model than that used by the incumbents. The incumbents are bound up in the physics of copper coaxial networks, whereas MRCI is based on the physics of fiber optic networks. Copper is a high-maintenance technology relative to fiber. Copper corrodes over 40 years. Because of this, the incumbents are bound to extract as much value as possible over this period of time. The economic model of the telcos and the cable cos is based upon the amortization of their initial investment over the life of their copper coax network. DSL and cable modem represent mature technologies that are fully depreciated, and we know from economic theory that an incumbent, because of their sunken investment, has limited incentive to adopt new technologies.
Mr. Ligowitz, we're going to have to shorten the time, but let me just give you another minute, please, to summarize the rest of the testimony that you have here today. And I'm sure that there will be questions from the committee as well.
Okay. I'll just jump to the conclusion. The MRCI model is currently being implemented by the Urban Cyberspace Company, Community Technology Center Laboratory, in a set of test market communities located in Harlem, New York, Jackson, Mississippi, and the Mississippi Delta, Columbia, Bennettsville, and North Charleston, South Carolina, with plans to expand to the Baltimore, Washington area and New Orleans. The goal is to pilot a demonstration project in the Upper Manhattan Empowerment Zone that will serve as a proof of concept. The proof of concept will become the basis for a white paper which will capture the investment model and the replication model. Of course, such a model could be adapted to the particular needs of the borough of Queens. The ultimate objective is to use the white paper as a tool to support progressive policymakers such as yourselves in the effort to craft legislation that will stimulate the next generation internet economy, targeted to the creation of regional innovation economies. In conclusion, a metro-scale innovation economy will catapult New York City back into the forefront of the internet and restore our overall global competitiveness by creating a knowledge-based workforce that will drive the digital economy. In the spirit of teledemocracy, where everyone, regardless of socioeconomic status or location, has ubiquitous access to the internet, we look forward to working closely with the Committee on Technology and Government and the Broadband Advisory Committee to make ubiquitous internet access commonplace. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions for Mr. Lincoln?
Very simply, when you were working in the South and when you're working with Abyssinian, I know you talked about this a little bit, but can you just say very clearly so people like me can understand what is necessary in terms of the ingredients to try to have the kind of ubiquitous coverage that we are all aiming toward? Has it been accomplished anywhere, and if so, what are the ingredients?
We're close to doing that in Mississippi, which actually is very progressive, and it's a combination of things. One, being able to get a long-term agreement with that municipality using their incumbent fiber. Actually, because MCI WorldCom went out of business, the UUNet hub has been laying their fallow. Secondly, it's access to the city's assets, which the city doesn't have the ability to sort of exploit, but which a company working with the city, such as mine, can exploit. So that's access to their towers, which are 30 feet tall, access to light posts. They already outfitted their first responders, both police and fire department, with the next generation electronic tablets. That's in the city of Jackson. In the Delta, it's very different. That requires the formation of a nonprofit cooperative of small municipalities. These are municipalities that range from 2,000 to 3,000 people, and some are as small as 350 people. And then as a nonprofit cooperative, then there's the ability to then create the kind of network. What we use for backhaul there isn't provided by any of the incumbents. We use Entergy's fiber optic network, which is the most extensive in Mississippi and throughout the South. So it doesn't rely on incumbent telcos.
Councilmember Sanders.
How much did that technology cost the people of Mississippi?
We couch it in the context of development. There's two answers to that again. We couch it in the context of, one, doing a green development, working with Carlton Brown's company. So it's built into the overall bond raise there, and the total cost of that network is $1.95 million, which in the context of a $500 million project is no cost. In the context of what it takes to put in the basic network to meet the needs of the Delta, that's $500,000, and we're looking to raise those monies from the Rural Broadband Telecommunications Authority, that's a part of the United States Department of Agriculture.
Around how much would it take to do
I think we could do a basic deployment at about $500,000. The basic deployment in the Upper Manhattan Empowerment Zone is around $365,000.
Neil.
So you are an IP provider, is that correct? Or you are just putting in infrastructure?
I'm not an IP provider. I basically have an advanced technology company. What I do is commercialize advanced technology. I have a history of doing this both through Columbia University and also working closely with the City Council and the Economic Development Corporation, where we had a set of community technology centers. Now we're taking this model of rather than going and doing what they did in Philly as far as trying to do mesh networks by going to the rooftops, we do it by building smart and green buildings. And those buildings, because of the real estate model and the standard pro forma revenue projections
kind
of that.
Is this the LISC program? Is this the LISC program with the developer?
No, this is working with a private developer. And then in doing this with the private developer, we basically gift the technology to the local community. And so rather than, with the downturn of the .com, it was tough to sort of make a case for deploying wireless broadband based on, say, the idea of Philadelphia Wireless. What we do is use a model that, one, identifies incumbent fiber optics. We create cooperative ownership of the network, and then my for-profit or my set of consortial partners then provide the technology and the broadband services and the broadband operation.
In Harlem, just to be a little more specific, so you have a project for $365,000. What will we see at the end of the day?
There'll be a megabit per second. Initially, there'll be a megabit per second wireless cloud that will go from 116th Street up to approximately 175th Street. And then people will be able to tie into this network using devices that either we're going to get manufactured out of China or we're going to work closely with Nokia to deploy. So we're actually also moving past the idea of people having home computers and distributed computing on that network.
It'll be wireless.
It's wireless, and then it has fiber optic and WiMAX backhaul.
Thank you.
Other questions? When picking up on Councilmember Brewer's question, Mr. Lincoln, is there any kind of regulatory relief that would be necessary in order to do what you're talking about on a broad scale in Manhattan or any of the other four
boroughs? The idea would basically be to hold the incumbents at bay so that they don't come shooting at such an initiative. That would be very important. And one way in which we're sort of doing that under the radar screen, if you will, is by forming these actual nonprofit cooperative consortia so that there's community ownership of the network. And then what this also does, and this is on the kind of telecommunications policy side, we hold the natural monopoly that the telcos and the incumbents have dormant. So that way, with end user ownership, you don't worry about this idea of increasing the cost of the content applications and services. It's all demand driven and decided by the end users. Because most times you own your own network, you're not really going to overcharge yourself, right?
Other questions for Mr. Lincoln? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd just like to remind anybody who is here and would like to testify who has not filled out one of these cards and delivered it to the Sergeant at Arms, please to do so within the next few minutes so that we could put you on the roster. And then again, we are proceeding with 3-minute statements and questions to follow by members of the committee. I would now like to call to the microphone Thomas Lowenhunt.
I'm Thomas Lowenhaupt, a resident of Jackson Heights, former member of Queens Community Board 3, and chair of its Technology Advisory and Communications Committees. I'm a member of the new advisory board here at LaGuardia Community College. I am the founder and acting director of Connecting.NYC Incorporated, a New York State not-for-profit created to acquire, develop, and develop the .NYC top-level domains. Other familiar top-level domains are .com, .org, .edu, .gov, .us. Our goal is to acquire .nyc. While completing my BA at Queens College, I had a job around the corner from this fine institution and took one course here, so I consider myself an alum and feel very at home. I'm here today to speak as a proud New Yorker who sees our city as the finest mix of people the world has ever known. This might seem unduly boastful, but I travel and I read, and I truly believe that there has never been a more caring, capable, and influential city in the history of mankind. But I see dark days ahead if we don't shape the internet to maintain our leadership role. The internet is the dominant force shaping our world. Because it's an invisible force, its impact is not adequately reported. But it is changing personal, family, social, civil, and business life. It will change borders, cultures, and relationships of all types in a manner and with a speed never before witnessed by mankind. And if we, New York City, continues the way we are, if we don't grab the reins of this vital resource, if we don't make the internet work for us, we will be supplanted as the world's leading city. Indeed, without such fundamentals as a namespace on the internet so that the world can find us and we can find one another, and with an inadequate telecommunication system, within my lifetime, I'd expect us to be viewed as a quaint, historic, former world capital. New York City did not request the internet. Its designers did not consult our city or even consider the needs of our city in creating its basic design. Today's internet is an accident, a quirk, that escaped from the labs of the military-industrial complex and has come to dominate our world. It was not conceived as the foundation telecommunication infrastructure for our city. From our city's perspective, it is totally unplanned, top-down system imposed upon us. We did not request it, but we need to respond. We need to make the internet work for us. Connecting NYC has initiated an effort to acquire the .nyc top-level domain. Paris and Berlin are seeking the .paris and .berlin names. I am confident that our efforts will correct one of the limitations imposed upon our city by the poorly planned internet, and that within the next few years we'll reap the benefit of domain names like hotels.nyc, schools.nyc, hospitals.nyc, council.nyc, mayor.nyc, queens.nyc, brooklyn.nyc, and news.nyc. Together with Paris and Berlin, we expect to correct this internet lacuna. But a much bigger job is creating a robust telecommunication system. There is nothing more vital to the future of our city than a quality communication system. We need to be able to connect with one another and the world with ease. Communication with the world is probably outside the purview of this advisory committee, but local communication is not. I've heard that 100 megabits is what many other locations currently have. We should seek a higher goal. New York City should be the city with the infrastructure for people engaged in intellectual pursuits. 100 years ago, a committee much like yours was created to set the transition from an agricultural to an industrial era. The commissioner's plan of 1811 established the city's basic street grid, 1st Street to 236th Street, 1st Avenue to 12th Avenue. That advisory board saw the future and set a course that has served us well. I urge you to make a strong case for our vital telecommunications needs and to organize an effort to assure that it is fulfilled. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Lohnhaupt? Councilmember Brewer.
Tom, can you? I think I know, but can you just summarize where you are in terms of the domain NYC and if you think we're going in the right direction?
Yes. Well, it's a long story, but it started in...
Make it short, Tom.
Short, I'll shorten it. 2001, our community board passed an internet empowerment resolution and suggested that the city acquire .nyc. Nothing happened for years, and 2 years ago, I got a call from people from Berlin who were looking for the .berlin name, and they were encouraging me to get involved again because they thought someone from the U.S. would be very helpful in doing that. And I did get involved and tried to get other people to do it. No one else would do it. I had to do it. So we started this not-for-profit last year. We're moving ahead. We have our the state has approved us as a not-for-profit educational organization. We have the 501c moving ahead. We've been participating for a year in the ICANN efforts. There's international pressure. There's a good deal of pressure on the ICANN to issue new top-level domains. They've allowed cities to do it. Paris and Berlin are doing it. We're going to be meeting in in Paris in June to put pressure on the ICANN again to enable cities to start using top-level demands.
Other questions for Mr. Lowenhaupt? Thank you very much, sir. I'd like to acknowledge the arrival of committee member Jose Rodriguez. Welcome. And I would like to invite to the microphone Sonia Park from the National Fund for Teaching Entrepreneurship.
Thank you very much, committee members and council members. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you this afternoon. My name is Sonia Park. I represent the National Foundation for Teaching Entrepreneurship, NFTE. We, since its inception in 1987, we have trained over 30,000 New York City youth in our program, which teaches entrepreneurship through the means of creation of a business plan. Right now, this year, we have reached approximately 5,000 children in middle school and high school, over 100 programs throughout the New York City area. That's a brochure of our organization that we were just passing out. What we've seen through our program is that our target youth are kids coming from at-risk communities. Over 98% of our programs have student populations of free and reduced lunch, 40% or more. So we're talking about kids that are coming from communities that are challenged in that way. And what we do is we go into the schools, we teach teachers to teach the students on how to develop business plans. And through this business plan engagement, they're learning how to develop. I'm sorry, can you hear me? I thought I was speaking too loudly, sorry. They are learning how to seize opportunities. It's more along the lines of changing the mindset of waiting for opportunities to come to them, and then changing that to creating their own opportunities through the creation of these business plans. Vital to this business plan premise is computer and internet access. They get it through the schools. It's either once a week, depending on computer lab access, but primarily they need to sit down and develop this through the computer. It's a PowerPoint presentation that they have to develop. So in tying it to PowerPoint presentation, but also being able to do research, find out what other plans, businesses are out there, what their competition's like, how much wholesale prices are going to be, that is all tied into our NFTE curriculum and program. And as Councilmember Brewer can attest, we had her out at a competition last January at Independence High School, and the winner of that competition, his business plan was to go out and provide tech service. He compared himself to Geek Squad. And vital to his plan was being able to be reachable through the internet and through his cell phone. And he won the competition primarily because he's already doing it. He's a senior in high school and he's already started his business plan. And this is something that we see and we encourage. It's great if the students, by the end of the program, can develop and run their own businesses, but our primary goal is to get them to think about what they can do right now to make that change in their lives. And central to that is access, computer access, and internet access. They need to be able to see what is beyond their immediate neighborhood, their immediate community. And that's what we're trying to do. So,
thank you, Ms. Park. Are there questions?
Students who tend to be a little bit older are availing themselves or have the access at home, or are they primarily doing entrepreneurship research at school and in the libraries? What is your experience?
It is definitely a challenge. We are in middle schools and high schools, so the students, Samuel, Nadia, and Daisy, would be along the lines of some of the students that we're actually reaching. Their primary research can be through the schools or through libraries, but we've found, especially with students that have finished our program and are interested in continuing on to actually create their businesses, web access, internet access can be spotty at best. So what we do is we provide internet service availability, connection to students, alumni students through our offices. So they can come and use, we have a bank of computers that we reserve for students to use. But the thing is, we are located down on Wall Street. Not everyone finds it convenient coming out from the Bronx to come down to Wall Street to be able to check and see how their website is doing, how their businesses are being run. So as a pilot program, we've actually established business centers in around the city. So we have one right now in Upper Manhattan, in the Bronx, and in Brooklyn, and we're looking to expand to Queens and also in Brooklyn. But this is really just a drop in the bucket to make computer and internet access available to our alumni students.
So you're actually saying, and I know many of your students, that without that kind of borough-specific, that except for the library and now they're graduates so they won't be able to go to their school, there really isn't any other fast, accessible, inexpensive connection.
No, if they don't have it at home, they really are dependent on libraries or community centers. I know that there are some great community centers that have made internet access available, but again, that can be tied to certain hours of the day, or you need to make a reservation to have access to that, which can be problematic because if the students are in school, they're in school all day, and then they have a window of a few hours after school to try and get their homework done and also to check on their businesses or whatever other research they need to get done.
Yes.
Do you have any recommendations for the commission in terms of if you have your wish, what would be the top three things that you would recommend so that your students will be able to have access and benefit from broadband connectivity? What would they be?
Well, I think the first thing would be availability in schools. The schools that we're in, lab access and lab quality is really dependent on location. Some schools are great. They're really on top of it. They have really state-of-the-art labs. Other schools are not in that situation. They have older equipment, or they have software that's out of date, or even if they do have internet access, it can be spotty. So that makes it a challenge for the students to take advantage of what's right there that they see every day. So that would be great, upgrading what we have right now in the schools. After that would be accessing that after schools, making some sort of program available for the students to continue to stay in school so that their only option isn't to go to the library and have 30 minutes at a time to do the research. If they have that availability in the school that they're already in, that would be great. And the third thing would be for the students that do have access at home, there is a problem with cost. Again, we're talking about the kids that we primarily work with are coming from communities that are challenged. So having internet access, even if it is dial-up, isn't always an option for them.
Now, you mentioned community-based organizations. How important do you feel having access to in community-based organization will be for those students?
Well, the programs
as an option.
As an option, where we have set up our business centers right now, some are actually based in schools that have given us after-school access, and some are based with community organizations. So, for instance, I know that HCCI, they have a great computer lab, but again, it's dependent on access and how they promote what they have to the community that they're in. And again, you know, they can do a great amount of outreach, and they've been able to do that, but they have set programs that they use. One day it is learning how to do multimedia, creating their own commercial. The next day would be about creating their own music video, that sort of thing. But then just general access overall isn't always an option for kids. And then there's a limitation to, there are 15 computers in that lab, so 15, and then the 16th kid has to wait. So it's not just having that access to CBOs, but having more CBOs, or again, having that access to schools, what's already there, making that available to these children.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Park.
Thank you.
I'd like to call to the microphone Barbara Caldwell of ThinkQuest New York.
I'm Barbara Caldwell from ThinkQuest New York City, and I'm honored to be here. I want to thank the City Council, Councilmember Brewer, Sean Bell, the Broadband Committee, and everyone here, and Senator Pressler for passing the legislation, but I think what you're doing is wonderful. I'm honored to be here, and I represent ThinkQuest New York City, which we're in all five boroughs of the city. And in the past 5 years, about 15,000 New York City kids have participated. We host an annual contest where kids work in teams and build websites. And we're primarily in the city's most disadvantaged neighborhoods. 75% of the schools who participate in ThinkQuest have the majority of the students on free and reduced price lunch. Also, we're very racially diverse. I can attest firsthand and validate what Samuel, Nadia, and Daisy said, that that broadband should be available in every student's home these days, and it's not in New York City, which is a tragedy. The significance of the internet is growing immensely, and it's not really just about the speed of downloading. It really has changed the whole way people communicate. It's changed the way they learn, the way the kids communicate, and the way they prepare for the future. Critically important information for kids about healthcare, scholarships, colleges, jobs, and community is available via broadband if they can get to it. And it's almost impossible now to download via dial-up. So I totally agree. I think what you're doing is wonderful, and I think that broadband should be available to everybody in the city.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Caldwell?
Is your group based in New York City, or is this?
Yes, we are.
Okay, I noticed some of the sponsors. It looks like you have an Apple logo and Pearson Foundation. Are any of those local organizations?
Yes, we deal with the local New York City Apple people and the Pearson New York, and they're helping us do teacher training on weekends.
Okay. And have you approached any of the large telecom operators in the city to support these activities?
Yeah, I have unsuccessfully approached Verizon. You know, it's hard. We have some wonderful supporters. But they don't include any of the telecom providers. And my point to Verizon was that they could do it in kind and just make broadband available throughout the city, since they've got a lot of the cable contacts with the 123.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
1 second before you run. Oh, don't, Caldwell. A few of the speakers have mentioned access at home. And I'm curious as to what your thoughts are around how to actually provide that access at home. It seems to be the linchpin.
I think actually with Verizon and the cable providers, it's a fabulous broadband that they're capable of doing. And I think if they would make it available free of charge or at very reduced rates to people who qualify under poverty levels, I think the whole problem would be solved. I think the kids, it will change their future. Actually, Georgetown University just did a study, and access to broadband is both being discriminated racially and economically. The people who could most benefit are the ones most disadvantaged. So I just think making it available free or low cost.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Caldwell.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
I'd like to call to the microphone Mary Wawrowska from the Queens Chamber of Commerce.
Good afternoon, Councilwoman Brewer, Councilman Sanders, and members of the Advisory Committee. Thank you once again for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the Queens Chamber of Commerce about affordable broadband in Queens. This is the third time I am testifying about this and other technology-related issues. As you recall, Councilman Brewer, I was at your first hearing, I guess it was 3 years ago,
yep.
And I believe I was the only individual present at that hearing. There were some larger private sector telecom companies. Every year, the Queens Chamber legislative platform includes the following: provide increased broadband access to underserved New York City areas. If New York City is to compete in a global market, it is essential that we improve access for underserved segments of the New York City population. While New York City health institutions are on the cutting edge of technology, it is sad that segments of the population, notably seniors, cannot take advantage of state-of-the-art monitoring equipment for lack of adequate broadband access. I know this personally because I serve on the advisory board of the NORC Advisory Council, and we provide telehealth service, and it's really a little difficult if there's no access to broadband to do that properly. It is equally frightening to think about how lack of broadband access might hamper Homeland Security monitoring efforts. Councilwoman Brewer sponsored a seminar titled The Digital Divide. That was, I think, about 2 or 3 years ago as well, Councilman Brewer. It is a most apt description of the shortfall in broadband access. Local Law 126 established an advisory committee on broadband access. We believe it's time to conclude study and take action. And I don't expect that to happen easily, but I would like you to know that the Queen's Chamber is an advocacy organization, not only for businesses, but for the community at large. And we meet regularly with elected officials at the federal, state, and city level. And we would be most happy if you come up with a platform or a budget or anything else to accomplish this. I can assure you we will stand with you and help you out. Thank you very much.
Excuse me, Ms. Vavruska.
Mary, I have a question. How many, I know we talked about this previously, but what do you think the percentage of small business in Queens who are accessing, that are accessing enough to make their business stronger? In many cases, people have access but don't know how to use it. Are there trainings?
Well, I think
that's... Give me a sense.
I didn't mention that I am chair of the Information Technology Committee of the Queen's Chamber. So we do have seminars periodically, and we have just received a grant to assist small businesses in the use not only of good business practices but also in technology. So we are moving in that direction. In addition, I'm a little pleased to say that we are adding an intern database to our website. We're linking up with all of the Queens colleges, and we're hoping that we will be able to match businesses, not necessarily Queens Chamber members, but any business in Queens that might have a need for a student. Hopefully that will be an incentive for a lot of businesses to get more involved with the technology.
Thank you, Ms. Vavruska. Ms. Vavruska is our last witness. Is there anybody on the dais who would like to share any closing thoughts? In that case, on behalf of the committee, I would like to thank everybody who came out to testify today for some very insightful comments on broadband. It's enormously helpful to us, and this process simply could not go forward without you. Many thanks, Councilmember Sanders, Councilmember Brewer. This has been a terrific experience, and thanks once again to LaGuardia Community College for this magnificent facility. Have a fine afternoon.
Thank you. I just want to also say that we've been joined by Councilmember Tish James, who just made it. And also we had a council member, Helen Sears, said a representative earlier. Thank you very much, and I'm sure if there are individual questions, we'll be around to ask them. And as always, thank you, Dean Birdsall.